Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Vada's War by Elizabeth Moon. Vada's War, Book 1. Trading in Danger, Part 2. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Barbara Pinolini, Jonathan Watkins, Lily Beacon, James Lewis, Andy Clements, Joe Brack, David Coyne, Tim Getman, Stephen Carpenter, Tom Simpson, Colleen Delaney, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford, Michael John Casey, Sonny Lasky, Mort Shelby, Yasmin Toison, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, Casey Platt, Dylan Lynch, James Konacek, Laura Quinn Anderson, Ken Jackson, and Richard Rowan.
The faces in the crew wreck space of the freighter Glennis Jones were all pale. The most senior looked at least 10 years older than he had before. Sergeant Callie Pitt of the Mac and C Military Assistance Corporation undogged her faceplate and ran it back. Let them see a human face. They needed that right now. They had undoubtedly heard the shots that had been fired. They stared at the blood on Pitt's boots and legs. With her faceplate open, she could smell it.
I'm Sergeant Pitt. Your crewman Skeldon tried to ambush us. He's dead. Your captain is alive but injured. I've called in a medical team.
How bad is she hurt? Can't I go see her?
We don't know yet. She's unconscious, and my training says not to move unconscious patients. Tell me about the medical facilities on this ship.
Well, we have a med box for minor emergencies.
No regen tanks? No trauma suite?
No. We didn't ever need them. Please, let me go see her.
Known her long?
Since she was little. First time she came aboard ship with her dad, I was a second shift cargo handler. Not on this ship, of course. She was maybe hip high on him then, trailing after her older brother.
Good kid. Quiet type. Did everything right?
Kai? I wouldn't say that exactly. Not the quiet part. Good, yes. But no sugar, baby. Honest. Sometimes too honest. That's why...
His mouth snapped shut abruptly, as if he'd almost said something he meant not to.
I want the medics to see her first. Best not move her. Best wait a bit. Someone's with her, monitoring vital signs. You just sit tight.
Gary nodded, mouth clamped on something he didn't want her to know. She sent Jeff to check out the galley, where, as per orders, the weapons the crew had listed were laid out on the table. He popped the video to her helmet display. 2 pistol bows. She hadn't seen pistol bows in a long time. Some knives, including the obvious kitchen cutlery. All that was by the book. The crew lockers were by the book. No hidden weapons, and only the personal effects you'd expect from experienced crew on a ship they didn't expect to be on that long. Spare ship suits, a properly primed, good-quality pressure suit for each, shore clothes, entertainment cubes and discs and viewers and players. Someone was studying for a higher rating in space drives and had the study cubes. Someone else had yarn and needles and a half-completed sweater. Little keepsakes, not worth much. They'd have the good stuff back home somewhere in Vada Transport Storage if they had no permanent residence. None of the crew were trouble but the one who'd died. That made sense. Gil reported the medics were coming through the lock.
Here's what you're going to do. You know your captain's hurt. You know our medics are coming to work on her. As long as you do what you're told, she'll be fine. Cross us up, and she'll die. Clear?
The crew all nodded, looking solemn and worried, just as they should.
Go back to your compartments and lie down on your bunks. If we need you to do something, you'll be told. In fact, who's on galley duty?
I am.
Small, dark-haired woman. Mihar Mahar, engineering fifth. Someone raised a hand. Mitt Gossen, environmental section first. So they mixed sections on galley duty. Interesting. Many ships rotated it by sections. And she wanted the section firsts available.
Mihar.
The woman looked startled to find that Callie knew her name.
Mr. Gossen, you're a section first. You need to stay loose. Mihar, they'll be sending over ration packs for the boarding party and medics, if the medics stay that long. All you have to do is heat them up. Jeff secured your weapons for the time being. You won't need the kitchen knives. The rest of you, go to your bunks and lie down. We'll keep you informed.
They clambered up awkwardly and moved to the side just as the medics came through with their equipment. Callie had already pointed them to the captain's cabin. They'd had time to replay the vid of the engagement. They didn't need her crowding that small space. When they'd passed, she went on forward to the bridge. There, she found two more worried faces. The old woman sitting the comm desk was Quincy Robin, chief of engineering, almost as old as the ship.
Is she all right?
She's alive. The medics are with her now.
What happened?
Callie explained briefly. Quincy's color came back.
Idiot boys!
Understand you're head of engineering.
Yes.
You reported no functional FTL drive. How did this ship get here with no functional FTL drive?
It failed us coming in. I swear I thought it had 10 more jumps in it, at least, when we left Slaughter Key. But there was a little wobble coming into Belinta, and then it was worse leaving Belinta. And the down jump to Sabine, well, the sealed unit went haywire, and we got cavitation damage downstream.
Huh.
So much for using this ship as a courier, which was what the old man had hoped for. Victor carried spare sealed units, but nothing that would fit on this tub.
We were trying to arrange repairs at the station when you blew the ansibles.
Quincy glared at her. Callie realized that the old woman wasn't scared.
What makes you think we blew the ansibles?
You have the big guns. Nobody else would blow ansibles.
We didn't blow the ansibles. We don't want trouble with ISC.
Then who did?
Don't know. Not us, that's all I know. So, your FTL's out. What about your other systems?
Fine, so far.
The old woman was still angry. Not scared a bit. Well, the old were like that, if they weren't scared of everything. Kai woke slowly as from deep sleep. It didn't feel right. What didn't feel right, she wasn't sure at first. A smell, not the smell of her cabin. Astringent, even medical. She opened her eyes. Above her, too close, was a shiny, curved surface. When she tried to move, her arms bumped into something firm and unyielding. The curved surface lifted away from her face. Now she could see more, and nothing reassuring. Too far away now, the overhead with rows of lights. Too big, the compartment in which she lay enclosed in something uncomfortably like a coffin.
Medbox.
Kai struggled to put facts together in a string that made sense.
Medbox means injury. I was injured? When? Where? And this place, what is it?
A face hung over her. She had never seen it before, that she was sure of, if nothing else. Its expression was serious. The mouth opened.
Do you know your name?
Name. What you call yourself. That is your name.
Kai fumbled around in a brain that felt like a basket of wool puffs, until a sharp, angular fact prodded her inquiry.
Name. Your name from him means my name to me. My name is
Gailara Vada.
Ah. And do you know where you are?
She looked around as far as she could see over the rim of the med box. For some reason, it seemed more like a ship than a hospital on planet.
I'm in a med box on a ship. I don't know for sure.
Do you know the date?
The whole concept of dates seemed slippery.
No.
No matter. What's the last thing you remember?
Kai didn't remember anything, but she pushed at the gray fuzzballs. Past the screen of her mind ran the equations for calculating oxygen output from a Class 3 environmental system per square meter of reactive surface. So she recited that, and then the ones for calculating drift on downjump.
Think of a person.
She tried, but couldn't remember anyone to think of. Person meant someone like her, like the man leaning over the med box. Suddenly, a cascade of faces appeared on the screen. Her father, her mother, her brother, her uncle, Cousin Stella, Aunt Grace Elaine, Gaspard, the Commandant, Mandy Rocher. The faces combined in scenes, in actions. Then a white streak blanked out everything for an instant, as if lightning had fired inside her head. She was abruptly completely awake, oriented, rememoried, and very, very frightened. She knew what that was. That was a memory module insertion. Someone had her memories on a mod, and they'd just reloaded her brain. Which meant her brain had been, at least, stuck in off, and at worst, completely gorked. And she knew why.
That idiot!
It was a stupid thing to do. I gather you didn't know about it?
No, I didn't know about it. I told them—
We know that much. It was on your recorder. What I'm asking is, did you know he had that crush on you?
No. Not exactly. I knew he was too grateful that we took them aboard, but I thought he'd go for Mihar in the end.
The end wasn't long enough. Here's the situation. You were knocked cold and got a bullet in the arm. The bullet was no problem. The stray needle we took out of your ankle was no problem either. But the head injury was bad enough that we did a pattern extraction and replacement once we'd stopped the bleeding and controlled the swelling.
You're the mercenaries. Mackenzie Military Assistance Corporation?
Yes. And you're aboard the Victor, our command ship for this operation. Because your ship lacked the right medical facilities.
My people?
Kai tried to sit up. The med box restraints held her back.
They're all right so far. Now, before you exit the med box, I need to do some final tests of function. Just lie quietly and answer my questions.
She couldn't do anything else. The med box restraints held her, and even if she got her arms loose, she didn't know how to unlatch a med box from inside.
I'm projecting a visual chart above you. What do you see on line 10?
Kai read off the symbols. After that came a color vision test and a test of depth perception, and then pictures of her crew to see if facial recognition was working. It was. Finally, he unlatched the box, removed the restraints, and helped her sit up. For a moment, she felt dizzy and nauseated, but it passed, and she was simply there, inside a warship's surgery, sitting on the opened case of a med box in a row of med boxes, wearing a pale blue shift with MMAC property stamped on it. Across the wide compartment was another row of med boxes, six with their status lights on, and down the middle, a row of operating tables, shrouded in the hoods that kept them sterile until needed. Kai had not really thought about how much medical treatment a mercenary force might need. For that matter, she hadn't seen this part of a Slaughter Key warship either.
It's as big as a hospital.
War isn't a pretty business. We have 30 med boxes, 10 operating sets, 5 regen tanks, and that's active. We have the stored capacity for field hospitals as well. Now, ready to stand up?
Kai pushed off the edge of the med box. Her knees felt rubbery, but she was able to stand.
Immobilization does that. Nothing we've come up with prevents at least temporary weakness. Now, I'm sure you've got your own medical personnel back home. I'm giving you a cube with details of the treatment you received here, some of which they may want if you need other treatment within the next standard year. Slaughter Key does use standard calendar units, doesn't it?
Yes.
Kai focused on the back home. If they were giving her medical reports for the doctors back home, that had to mean they weren't intending to kill her.
Your arm and ankle responded well to the regen tank treatments. You should, however, do 15 minutes a day of rehab exercise. The details are on the cube. To regain strength at the maximum rate. Your C-spine injury may cause you some difficulty as you get older. I would advise you to consult your medical personnel about a regen treatment when your neural recovery is complete. We've got it stabilized, but I wouldn't be surprised if there were a little soft tissue damage which we couldn't regen because of the primary brain injury.
C-spine injury?
Yes. Luckily, Sergeant Pitt knew enough not to move you until the medics got there, but it's perfectly stable now.
Kai resisted the sudden urge to put her hands up and feel around her neck. It didn't hurt. Nothing hurt, really. But the knowledge that she had been knocked silly and taken off the ship like a bundle of rags, she, the captain, who was supposed to ensure the safety of her ship and her people.
When can I get back to my ship?
I don't know. After the Major talks to you, probably. It's up to command, not to me. You're fit for duty as is. Well, once you get clothes on. I'm afraid your uniform is pretty much gone. Just a moment.
He walked to the far side of the compartment. Kai leaned against the med box she'd come out of and wondered about the six others with lights on. That was easier than wondering what she was going to do now. The man came back with a neatly folded bundle. For the first time, she noticed what must be a name tag stenciled on his tunic. Dubois.
Your ship's sent over a clean uniform. You'll want to change, and any moment now you're going to want to use the toilet.
She did, she realized.
Right through there. You can also shower if you like, though the med box does a sonic clean every 4 hours. When you're dressed, come out, and you'll be escorted to the Major's office.
He did not tell her not to try to escape. She could figure that out for herself, and clearly he knew it. Kai took the bundle and retreated through the door marked staff only. Inside, she found three shower cubicles, deep sinks, and a row of toilets. Sonic cleaning or no, she wanted a shower and shampoo, and the brisk water washed away another layer of confusion. When she combed her hair at the mirror above the sinks, she could see nothing of what had happened. Her arm had a pucker scar that looked old, well healed, but no soreness, even when she raised it high overhead. Her ankle's scar was smaller, hardly visible. Her hair seemed shorter. She put on her uniform, the alternate one her mother had insisted she buy. It was annoying even now that her mother had been right. Thankful that whoever had sent it had included underwear. When she'd pulled on the soft-soled ship boots, she felt much more like herself.
I meant to tell you, we don't extend regen to cosmetic results, but that scar on your arm will respond to about 2 hours of regen if you ever want to get rid of it.
It's fine. Thank you.
Kai was annoyed with herself that she hadn't thanked him before.
Quite all right. It was orders, after all.
Thank you, anyway. Clearly you, and others in this place, saved my life.
You're welcome. Corporal Konas will take you to see the Major.
Corporal Konas was waiting, armed. Kailara wondered what they thought she could do, that they needed to give her an armed escort, but she walked forward when he gestured.
Captain Vada, I'm Major Harris. Please, have a seat.
The Major sat behind a desk in a tiny office so bare and tidy that Kai wondered if it was a real working office or just a place chosen to interview hapless civilians. He did not smile.
Captain Vada, we have a problem.
What is that, sir?
You're aware that someone blew the system ansibles.
Yes.
We didn't do it. We don't blow ansibles. We don't want trouble with the ISC any more than anyone else does. Overcharging, monopolistic pirates they may be, but what they do is essential. And what they do to people who bother their ansibles is exorbitant.
I see.
Naturally, everyone thinks we did it. Warships appear, the ansible platforms blow. Obvious. I'm sure by now the ISC has figured out where we are and is thinking the same thing. The only party who won't believe we did it is the party who actually did it. And so far, no one has claimed responsibility. It would be far handier if the mercenaries were to blame.
I see.
Kai remembered wondering why mercenaries, who depended on Ansible communications as much as anyone else, would risk the serious and permanent annoyance of the ISC. Control of Ansibles was one thing, destruction entirely another.
We have, besides the operation we were hired to perform, several other tasks now facing us. We need to clear ourselves with the ISC before they come barreling in here and blow us up on spec. And we need to house hostages safely in the meantime, lest we incur judgment for their fates as well. We had hoped to use your ship, the smallest, as a courier to the ISC. But I understand that you have no FTL capability.
Right. And we also have a commitment to deliver agricultural machinery now in our holds to Belinta.
Neither of which is possible without an FTL drive. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, yes, sir. Major Harris, if I may ask, would it be possible to obtain a sealed unit from the repair yards on Sabine Prime's orbital station?
Not now or in the immediate future.
Major Harris did not explain why, and Kai was reluctant to ask. He cocked an eyebrow at her.
You're not acting like most civilian captains, Captain Vada. Most of them try to bluster and scold and command me to do what they want.
It's my first voyage, Major.
I suspect it's more than that. What are you? Slaughter Key Space Service operating undercover?
Me? No, sir.
You're very free with your sirs, Captain Vada. I don't mind it, but it's reminiscent of a discipline I'd expect to know better than you. Master Sergeant Pitt remarked on your demeanor as well.
Sergeant Pitt?
She's the one who broke your neck and then called the medics. Not your average civ, she said about you. More like an officer candidate. You have something to say, Captain Vada?
Not really, no. You have an extracted pattern from me, and I don't doubt there was some interrogation while I was in the med box.
And that, too, is not something I would expect a young and inexperienced civ trader to know.
Harris leaned back, hands behind his head.
Look here, Captain Vada. It's not our practice to harm neutral civilians, which you clearly are. But we have a proposition for you. A proposition that could work to your advantage later. I'm not going to offer that possibility to someone who won't be straight with me.
All right. I was kicked out of the Slaughter Key Space Academy in my last year.
I see. Why?
I trusted someone, a junior cadet, and tried to help him out. He lied to me. He just wanted to make trouble for the government, and my help gave him that opportunity. It embarrassed the Admiral, and I was the handy sacrifice.
That's two young men you've trusted unwisely. If I were you, I'd stop doing it.
Mild as the rebuke was, Kai felt her face going hot. It wasn't fair. She hadn't trusted Skeldon. She struggled with her emotions.
Just a bit of advice I'd give any young officer. Everyone makes mistakes, but not the same ones over and over.
I don't even like them.
Young men in general, or these young men?
These, but they seem so helpless sometimes. Kai glared at him.
Sorry, but the first thing mercenaries lose is the rescue fantasy thing. My advice is the next time you see someone you think you need to rescue, walk quickly away on the far side of the street. But that's not important. What I have to propose now affects both of us.
And what is that?
All right. We had hoped to use your ship as a courier to the ISC, but since you have no FTL drive, we can't. However, we need a place to stash some neutral civilians who might otherwise give us problems. Your ship is more than adequate for that task. The only problem is that some of them are older than you, and, at least in their own estimation, rank higher. We would prefer to have civilians under civilian command, saves us work, and prevents certain kinds of problems. But that will depend on you. Simply put, we would like to hire your company to transport, temporarily and in this system, some passengers. For that service, we're prepared to pay standard per diem for an expected duration of that transport.
Harris glanced down at his desk display.
If our calculations are correct, that would come to something in the neighborhood of 250,000 credits.
250,000 credits. That would repay the loan on Sabine Prime and finance the repairs to the FDL drive as well. Kylara tried not to smile.
You do realize we have limited quarters for additional personnel. How many were you anticipating?
Your environmental system will handle a total of 70, isn't that correct?
70? Yes, though that's right at Redline. 55's the rated limit, but we don't have the space.
You have cargo holds, aired up, I'm informed. We'd supply some amenities, pallets and blankets.
My cargo holds are stuffed full of cargo, on contract to the Economic Development Bureau on Belinta.
They'd have to be emptied, or at least enough to accommodate 50 additional passengers. With your present crew, that keeps you under the red line.
Just barely.
Kai could not believe she was arguing with a man who had her completely at his mercy, but Vata's stubbornness held her spine stiff.
And we can't just dump cargo. We have a contract. You understand contracts?
Indeed we do understand contracts, Captain Vata. It is in pursuit of our own contract obligations that we find ourselves in need of your ship, for which we are willing to pay reasonable fees. Do you understand necessity?
Yes, but that cargo—
It's your customer's money. Surely there's insurance.
Actually, no. They had an earlier shipment which was lost by another carrier. Their insurance is not willing to pay on that because the cargo completely disappeared. They hired me to bring them another, but insisted it be on spec.
So it's your money in the holes?
Yes.
Harris stared at his desk display, lips folded under. When he looked up, Kai thought she saw the ghost of a smile in the crinkles by his eyes.
All right, Captain. Here's our best offer. We'll have people help you net your cargo and put a Homer tag on it so you can pick it up later. In fact, we'll help you load it later, and we'll pay the full per diem for those passengers if you command. Otherwise, we'll have to put a military crew on board, in turn your crew and you. We just keep you here until this is over. And where will your cargo be then?
Trade and profit.
Very well. I accept your offer.
Captain Vata, I predict you are destined to have an interesting life. We'll have that contract ready in hard copy in a minute or so, and then, if you're ready, we'll return you to your ship.
I'm ready.
And thank you for not asking more details of our operation. It shows uncommon discretion.
I'm trying to learn, Major.
Slaughter Key should have hung the other fellow out to dry, not you, Captain. They don't know what they're missing. Though your commanders might have had ulcers.
He reached out his hand, and Kai shook it.
Now, let's get over to legal and get that contract signed and sealed, shall we?
The ship's legal offices consisted of a warren of little rooms and one large conference room with a big table. Here, Kai and the Major waited. She noticed that one armed guard still trailed them, but stayed outside the door here, until another officer came in.
I hate these subordinate contracts. Always a mess. Always so many exclusionary clauses.
Senior Lieutenant Mason, this is Captain Vata.
The man extended a damp hand to be shaken.
Captain Vata. Now, I understand you're from Slaughter Key?
Yes, that's right.
Signatories to the Tri-System revision of the Interstellar Uniform Commercial Code?
Yes.
Well, that simplifies things. Now, do you want to read this yourself, or shall I explain it?
I'll read it.
Since you have no legal representation, I am bound to assist you in understanding anything that might be unclear.
Thank you.
Kai reached for the sheaf of hard copies. He released them with seeming reluctance, and she opened the folder. Familiar terms stared back at her. Consigner, consignee, liability for this and that. She read through, carefully, mindful of lessons learned in the family, that it's the clause you skip over that destroys your profit when you don't fulfill it.
I don't see anything about immunity in case of untoward circumstances not resulting from the negligence of Vata Transport.
They'll be on your ship, under your control. What else?
Natural causes. And it's a war zone. I'm not going to have Vata Transport held liable for stray shots or capture by the other side.
The lawyer gave the Major a long look.
All right, we'll change it. Won't take a moment.
Mason reached for the papers. Kai handed back the one involving carrier liability and held on to the others. He glowered, but walked out with the one sheet.
Lawyers, they're always trying something. Of course, that's why we pay them.
True. Our company's legal staff's the same.
They taught you well, though we don't intend to have any accidents and blow you away.
Good.
They sat in almost companionable silence until the lawyer came back, with a new page 14 that included the missing clause. Kai read it, inserted it, and nodded.
All right, I'm ready to sign.
Major Harris signed for the Mackenzie Military Assistance Corporation, and she signed for Vata Transport Limited. The lawyer signed a line that specified the contract had been prepared in accordance with the Tri-System Universal Commercial Code. Then Major Harris stood up.
Let's get you back to your ship. Your passengers will start arriving in about 6 hours. I'm sending a working party and nets to help with your cargo.
The trip back to Glenys Jones went swiftly. Kai and the members of the working party all wore pressure suits, There was still no way aboard except the little escape vacuum lock, and she sat webbed to the bulkhead in the back of one of the warship's assault shuttles, lurching to and fro with the abrupt changes of acceleration required by a rapid transit. Kai went first through the lock, with two others, and on the inside a guard in armor waved her on up the passage. She came out of the passage to find another guard, this one not in armor. This was a lean woman with close-cropped gray hair and PIT stenciled on her uniform.
You can take your pressure suit off here.
Kai stripped out of the suit. Her ship still smelled like her ship, like home.
Captain Vada! You look great.
Excuse me?
Sorry, you probably don't remember. I'm Master Sergeant Pitt, and I'm the one who knocked you down harder than I meant to.
Oh, that's all right. And by the way, thanks for calling in the medics.
Kai suspected that for all the fine phrases in the McKenzie advertising, standard operating procedure would have been to finish her off.
Right thing to do. Anyway, they said you were coming back today. I'm glad to see you looking so well.
How are my crew?
Fine. They've all been very sensible. And very worried about you.
We now have a contract with McKenzie.
Kai pulled her copy out of her uniform jacket.
Have they told you?
Yep. We're to help unload as many cargo holds as you say we need to, net and beacon the cargo, and then help you through loading passengers. It's your ship, Captain. You tell us what we need to do, and we'll do it. For my sins, I'm your liaison.
Right then. First thing, I want to let the crew know I'm back and functional. Next, we'll get Mitt's assessment of the environmental system and Gary's assessment of cargo. He'll know the easiest and fastest way to unload stuff.
They're waiting in the wreck area. I'll just stay here and organize the working party. They'll need to stay in pressure suits.
Kai went forward to the wreck area. Her crew were scattered around the tables, consuming some meal. She realized she was not oriented to ship's time and didn't know which it was, and talking quietly. No guard stood over them. That much was good. She wondered what to say, but then Quincy looked up and saw her.
Kai! Captain, how are you?
Fine. I don't have an implant, though. What I do have is a contract.
A contract? We thought you were dying!
Luckily, not. Though it was apparently a near thing. I've got my medical records with me, if anyone's that curious. I'd just as soon not look. What they told me was scary enough.
What do you mean by a contract?
McKenzie has hired Vada Transport to care for some neutral civilian passengers while we're stuck here in this system. I know.
Kai held up her hand to forestall objections.
I know we don't have cabin space or comfortable facilities. I know all that. We're going to net our cargo and put it out with a beacon to pick up later and bed passengers in the cargo holds. First thing, Mitt, is our environmental system holding nominal in all ways?
Yes, Captain.
Good, because we'll be stressing it. They're sending us 50, and they'll be here in about 5 hours. Gary, what's the easiest hold to unload that will hold 50 people for some days? Room for pallets and some exercise space?
Standard configuration, not stacking bunks, just pallets. And we don't have that many pallets.
They're coming too. Wait, I'll get Master Sergeant Pitt.
Kai was sure Pitt would know how much space to calculate. Pitt did. And in minutes, Gary had figured out the simplest way to unload cargo and take on passengers. That was the last quick and simple action of a day that had started in sick bay and showed no signs of ending. The hold's pumps sucked out the air, leaving them ready for opening the cargo hatches to vacuum. Then the unloading began, with Gary Tobai handing out labels to stick on each part of the load and on each netful. When they had the holds empty, the nets stuffed with equipment, they had only an hour to prepare the holds for their passengers. Close the cargo hatches, release the air in the tanks. Airing up was one thing, but warming up quite another. The mercenaries' work crew, laying out bedrolls on the decking, positioning the portable toilets, showers, sinks, left puffs of breath smoke behind them. No time to hook up the plumbing. Though all the equipment was positioned where it would be most convenient to the ship's existing lines, at least water wouldn't be a problem, with their existing stores and recycling.
If you don't mind my asking, Captain, have you ever been in charge of a refugee situation?
Master Sergeant Pitt reminded Kai a lot of Mech Robert back at the Academy.
No?
You have suggestions?
Yes, Captain, if you don't mind.
Not at all. Pretend I'm the greenest young officer you ever saw. What would you try to get me to do without actually telling me?
It's not my place to say, you know.
No, it's your place to hint, insinuate, and invisibly lead. I don't know if they told you, Master Sergeant Pitt, but I'm a flunk-out from the Slaughter Key Space Academy. And if I'd paid closer attention to Master Sergeant McRobert's hints, I wouldn't have trusted the wrong person and been kicked out.
Ah. McRobert is the fellow who gave you that warship kit?
Kai didn't like thinking of strangers in her cabin going through her things, but no use being angry about it now. Yes.
That explains a lot. All right then, Captain, here's what you need to do.
Pitt listed actions, some of which Kai had already thought of. Assigning teams for shift work to keep the place tidy, prepare meals, etc. And some of which she hadn't, like placing guards on the galley and crew storage.
Thing is, they're going to be angry and bored. And some of them, the captains of the other Civ ships, are going to think they should be running this. Not a baby-faced kid like you. You have to convince them otherwise. And you have to not let any pretty boy like that Skeldon get past your guard.
Is everyone going to assume that I trusted Skeldon too much?
Probably. Probably Gary or Quincy had told Pitt about her fifth birthday party, too. And no time to brood about it now, or about the description of her as baby-faced kid.
I don't have an implant now, so I'd appreciate it if you'd send that list to Quincy. She's the closest I've got to a Master Sergeant of my own.
They couldn't save your implant.
And they recommended I not have a new one fitted for 6 months until any remaining neural reshaping is definitely stable. But I didn't have one in the Academy, so it's not as bad as if I had depended on it for the last 4 years.
That's good. Look, based on my observations and reports I've gotten from buddies working with your future passengers, I could give you recommendations on who's good for what.
Thanks. Any info you have, I'll take.
And do with what she would. But she figured Pitt understood that. Then the passengers began to arrive. Unfortunately, to keep the cargo holds aired up meant that all the incoming passengers had to cycle through the escape vacuum lock and then be shunted down the maintenance passage and into the area prepared for them. The passengers, Kai was told, comprised the senior ship's officers from all the civilian ships interdicted in the system. Captains, first and second officers, communications personnel, and engineering firsts. The passenger ship Empress Rose, of the famous Imperial Spaceways, would serve the mercenaries as a courier, a choice that meant her passengers would be delayed as little as possible, but her captain would be interned on Glenis Jones. All the passengers had been informed of the situation, and the mercenaries seemed confident that they would be reasonably cooperative, but Kai had her doubts. She didn't intend to show any of them that she was a green cadet with her first command. Instead, she wore her dress uniform, with cape, and stood at the turn from the escape passage to the maintenance passage, greeting each person who came aboard. Without an implant assist, she had no way to know which was which.
Good day. Welcome aboard. That way, please.
It was a spare greeting, but it was a greeting, and she could tell from the expressions that her captain's rings and cape had an effect. When the passengers were aboard, the work party carried in the rations taken from the civilian ships. These stuffed the little galley and its storage and filled half the wreck area as well. She hoped it would be enough. 10 days, 50 additional people, 3 meals a day, 150 additional meals to prepare. In a galley meant for a crew of less than 20. But they were alive, unharmed, and with any luck would survive this and even be paid.
Time to go. We've unloaded all your supplies. Your passengers are secured in the cargo holds. Someone should come behind us to secure the hatch.
Right. Gary, if you'll see to the hatch.
And thanks, Captain, for being sensible about this.
Thanks for not killing me.
Kai watched the mercenary walk away, already fitting the helmet on her pressure suit.
What would it have been like to have someone like Pitt at my side year after year?
For a moment, she allowed herself a last moment of grief for the lost opportunities, but the opportunities now before her were exciting enough. She went forward to the bridge, where Riel was in the pilot's chair as if he hadn't moved since she left.
I hope you've rotated shifts.
Yes, Captain. Glad to have you back.
I'm glad to be back. And for our next adventure, let's get through the next 10 days or so with no such excitement, shall we?
I certainly hope so.
Kylara sat in the command seat and flicked on the circuits. With the earbud in, she could access data almost as quickly as with the implant. A fast check of ship systems for herself, and Glennis Jones was fine, except for the FTL drive. Video from the cargo holds, where her passengers were standing around in clumps, showed talking and gesturing. When she listened in on the audio, most of the talk was angry. That wasn't good.
This is Captain Vada. Once again, welcome aboard the Glennis Jones.
A tall man with silvery hair in a captain's uniform turned around, glared at the nearest vid pickup, and approached it.
I demand that you come down here and straighten this mess out. What did they mean you had a contract with them?
Thanks to the earbug's link to the personnel files, she knew this was Captain Christofsen of the Empress Rose.
Captain Christofsen, I will be speaking to you and the other captains shortly. As you must realize, we have a great deal of work to do to make this ship as comfortable and efficient as possible in the next few hours. Bear with us, please, as we get this done. We should have a meal for you all in about 3 hours.
This is outrageous! This is nothing but a cargo hold. It's not even warm. You can't seriously expect us to sleep on the cargo deck in these disgusting bedroll things. I demand a stateroom. Captains of respectable ships do not sleep on the floor.
Kai's first impulse to share her cabin with the more senior captains had been quashed by Pitt's advice, but it would not have survived this.
Excuse me, Captain Christofsen, but this is not the time to make complaints. I will consider your complaints later. At the moment, I need you and the other captains to organize the work parties needed to finish making your holds comfortable. I'm sure your personnel would be more comfortable commanded by familiar officers, so I've arranged a rota which permits shipmates to work together.
Work parties? Passengers don't work, Vata. Of course, you don't know about passenger ships.
Kai's temper rose at the contempt in his voice. She glanced at Riel, who made a rude gesture.
I'm sure you're aware that this is not a normal passenger service. Things are difficult for us all.
Well, not for you, apparently. You can loll in whatever passes for luxury on this tub. Not that I expect it's much.
Enough!
Somewhat to Kai's surprise, it worked. Christofsen blinked and looked stunned.
I have just returned from having surgery on the mercenary flagship. I was nearly killed when my ship was boarded, and I don't see any scars on you, sir. Don't push your luck.
His mouth had dropped open. Now it shut with a snap.
Well, they didn't say that right.
No reason for them to. I'm lucky to be alive, and so are you. Let's keep it that way.
But I still think
Captain?
That...
As you must realize, this ship is not large enough to give everyone the quarters they deserve, and it would be unfair to play favorites. The working crew will stay in the crew quarters, and the passengers will stay where they're put. Is that clear?
Yes, but I still intend to file a complaint. It must break some law for a neutral civilian to sign a contract with a mercenary company.
Actually, no. Most cargo firms sign transport contracts with mercenaries all the time. Section 234.6 Universal Commercial Code. If you were combatants or war materiel, that would be Section 234.7.
She thought of pointing out that he might well have had mercenary officers as passengers when they were on leave or undercover assignment, and thought better of it.
I realize this has all been a grave inconvenience for you, but we're all going to have to make the best of it. Captains, please organize your ship's personnel into working parties. We have been given basic information about the qualifications of passengers. In addition to the work parties dealing with food, sanitation, and maintenance, we may be requesting specific personnel to assist in ship systems areas where the very small existing crew is overloaded.
Other captains visible in the pickup nodded, but Christofsen still looked uncooperative.
Too bad.
Kai kept the video and audio monitors on, but cut off the intercom to the holds. Instead, she called the galley.
How's the meal prep going?
We figured out how to keep all the frozen stuff that doesn't fit in the freezer. We turned the heat off in number 3 and put it in there. Quincy's trying to cobble up a cooler for the perishables that won't fit into storage, and the cooks are using up whatever won't fit in either.
Good. Questions?
Do we try to keep the food sources separate and feed the different ships' crews stuff off their own ships?
No. Too complicated.
I don't even know if they brought proportional amounts off the various ships.
There's gold eye raspberries off Empress Rose. I've never even tasted one.
Enough for everyone?
For one meal.
Serve them up. If that captain brought them for his own special meals, he can just suffer through sharing.
Trouble?
He'd like to be. He's used to being in charge, and he thinks being stuck in the cargo hold of a freighter is the worst that can happen.
You be careful. We don't have that fancy medical team to fix you up if anything goes wrong again.
Kai rubbed her neck, which was beginning to hurt. It was probably just tension. I know. A few minutes later, Bia brought trays up to the bridge. Her tray had a large bowl of gold-eye raspberries, a jug of cream and some sugar, as well as a hearty sandwich of thin-sliced meats and cheeses.
Gary said you sounded like you needed to eat. Riel, here's yours too.
I probably do. I think my last meal was... I don't even know.
The others will be ready on time, Gary says, but how are we going to get them down to the passengers?
That's what the work parties are for. What is this stuff anyway? Tastes expensive.
From Balkna's Bright Eyes. They had trays of already sliced meats in one of the coolers, so we thought, better eat them now. All kinds of stuff I didn't even recognize, but tasty.
As soon as I finish this, I'll go down and meet with the captains, explain the rotation I've been working on. I better take someone with me, in case that idiot Kristoffsen tries anything.
Rhodes' captain? What's he done?
Acted like a spoiled brat at summer camp. All huffy and demanding and complaining.
Thinks I've done something wrong by taking a contract with the mercenaries. Dad always said passenger carriers were snooty. So I'll just take someone along. Mihar and her pistol bow, I think. The nine captains looked unhappy but said nothing at first as Kai handed out the work party rota. Right now, only the toilets interface with our environmental system. We need to get the showers and the sinks hooked up as well. I know your senior engineers are with you, so we'll need to get their help to work with my engineering first, Quincy Robin. I understand your schedules were all synced with ours 2 days ago, is that right?
They nodded.
Good. That means the meal we're about to have is second shift main meal, and...
I expect that you'll reserve rations from the Empress Rose for Empress Rose personnel.
The other captains gave Kristoffsen a look.
That isn't possible. We have limited storage space for perishables. Although we've allocated additional cargo space for frozen rations, we've combined all the rest in order of use.
But our rations are gourmet quality.
You were planning to feast on fancy stuff and champagne while the rest of us ate sardines and crackers?
That was Captain Lucas, of the Balkness Line cargo ship Balkness Bright Eyes.
I hate to disappoint you, but the rations we sent aboard were not so bad that we need your red ripe strawberries or whatever it was.
Gold eye raspberry.
Good enough. I prefer summer berries from Winterfest, lightly dusted with cinnamon.
The two men were looking puffy around the neck, and Kai could have laughed.
Actually, I prefer to find out what Captain Vada needs from us to make this as comfortable as possible.
Captain Pazin, that was, Kai saw from the list. A good 10 centimeters shorter than Captain Kristoffsen, stocky, dark hair graying at the temples, and enough weathering on his skin to show that he didn't spend all his time aboard ship. His ship, the Marie, was about the size of most Vada transports. He winked at Kai.
If we haggle too long over kitchen affairs, Captain Vada, who actually has a ship to command, might just decide to go back to work and ignore us.
But it's...
Pazin held up his hand.
Captain Vada, my two engineering staff are at your disposal. Perhaps after eating? I'm sure you'd like to get all the plumbing hooked up as soon as possible.
Yes, I would. You'll all be more comfortable when you have shower facilities and somewhere to wash up your things. As you know, this is a small ship, and this many personnel aboard puts us at the limit of our environmental system. Unfortunately, this means we must ration water use to be sure that nothing unbalances the tanks.
But there are shower units.
Yes, and I assure you I will be as generous as possible with the water allowance. The calculations our engineering staff made support a maximum of 3 fairly short showers per hour, which works out to 1 per 24-hour day per person. However, for the first day, as the system adjusts to more throughput, I'm asking you to hold that to 1 shower per hour down here. My crew is also restricting use.
What about cooking and eating?
We'll be flash cleaning cooking and eating utensils to conserve water and pressure on the environmental system. Since we're not under boost, we've trailed a Peterson line, and that will provide enough extra power to cover it.
We were told to bring tableware. We were not told it had to be flashproof.
Kai was ready to let Kristoffsen eat off the deck with his fingers, but she held on to her temper.
I'm sure your company can make a claim against Mackenzie for whatever damage is done to your tableware, Captain Christofferson. My main concern is that everyone on this ship have sufficient food, water, and air to survive until this is over.
The others nodded, as if they agreed this made sense. Christofferson looked around for support and found none.
Now, the meal's almost ready, in the galley, but we need people to carry it down here. I've assigned that duty first to Marie. So, Captain Payson, could you assemble your work team, please? I'll take them back to the galley with me.
He nodded.
The rest of you, please speak to your engineering personnel and let them know that after the meal, they'll be assisting Quincy Robin in hooking up the rest of the plumbing.
Payson's work party, like Payson himself, seemed sensible and willing. They and Kai's crew managed to get all 50 meals to the passengers in one trip. Predictably, Christofferson was furious that the GoldenEye raspberries had been shared with everyone. Lucas wasn't thrilled with the discovery that his ship's expensive deli cuts were being shared, but it was clear he didn't want to look like Christofferson, so he claimed he'd told Kai that, of course, all his ship's rations should be shared. Finally, they were all eating, and Kai had time to chat with Quincy about the plumbing work to be done. Quincy and her engineering crew, with the help of the environmental techs, had been working on the backside plumbing, from the environmental system to stubs with a separate set of cutoff controls.
Thing is, if they ever forgot and all showered and flushed and washed clothes or whatever at the same time, it would definitely overload the system. We could just hook up one shower, one toilet, and one tub, but that would be really inconvenient. What I thought was we could have it set up so that only two showers could go at once, one in each hold, with a timer so they couldn't just stand there for an hour.
I know one who probably would. Good thinking, Quincy.
We could also do a max water flow for the whole system, but that would mean drops in water pressure in every outlet when anyone used anything. So I decided against it. Mitz added another 2 units of culture, so he says in 24 to 36 hours, we should be able to maintain maximum throughput.
How's it going to work when they leave? No, sorry, I should ask Mitz that.
Already done. 24 to 36 hours to cycle down, and then we're back on normal usage.
So how do you want to organize the work crews?
I'll supervise one, and Bea can supervise the other. Very basic stuff, just sticking pipes and seals together, and then connecting them through the bulkhead to the stubs we have. Shouldn't be more than 2 hours' work, max.
Sounds good to me. I'm going to my cabin for a bit.
Captain, I'm sorry, but your cabin isn't exactly what it was. Are you sure you want to do that?
In the flurry of activity, Kai had managed to forget about Skeldon's attack.
Oh, I still have things I need in there.
Well, if you need to switch cabins, we section firsts can move into yours and you can have number two.
I'll be fine.
Kai hoped she was right. Now that she thought about it, she really didn't want to go back in there, but she had to.
I'll come with you.
You don't have to do that. I'll have to get over it someday. In fact, someday is now.
Kai headed down the passage with a wave. Quincy trailed her. Her cabin, the hatch neatly closed.
What's inside?
She didn't know. She opened the hatch. At first glance, it looked just the same. She had a moment of dizziness, a visceral memory of being shoved, of pain, of falling. She stood still, waited for it to pass. Next, she saw the state of the deck carpeting. Paler and darker blotches, the palest, near the hatch. It looked as if someone had splashed bleach all over it and then stirred with a mop. Cabinets on the bulkheads looked streaky rather than smooth blue-gray. Quincy had come up behind Kai.
They used something the ship sent over. Supposedly, there's no chance of contamination now, and no toxic residue.
Good. But it's a good thing we aren't trying to sell this ship as a yacht or anything.
So, we're back to selling the ship for scrap?
Right now, we're back to staying alive as long as possible. Let's not complicate matters.
Yes, our situation is so simple.
You must be feeling better. You're back to being ironic.
Kai, we're just so happy to see you alive and well.
Kai thought about telling Quincy that she'd had a memory mod download, but decided against it.
Me too. I did remember to tell you that my implant's non-functional, didn't I? In fact, they took it out.
Yes, but I thought those things were supposed to be indestructible.
Unless someone takes them apart.
which apparently they had to do for some reason, such as, I would guess, making sure I was who I said I was.
Does that compromise anything we care about?
Possibly, but there's nothing I can do about it now. Not until I can notify Vada Home Office. Luckily, I had only the most basic package. This ship, this voyage, the first level contact codes, standard contract format, that kind of thing. No company strategy, no other trade routes or conditions.
Good, then. I'll leave you. It's about time to get those working parties working.
Call if you need backup. Quincy waved, and Kai was left to look around her cabin alone. She opened and closed the cabinets and drawers. Yes, clearly they'd been searched, but most things seemed to be in place. Even Aunt Gracie Lane's fruitcakes, their flowered paper messily taped down. She didn't see the ship model, but the box was there, and it rattled. Probably the model had been broken. She didn't feel like looking at it right then. Her logbook was still in the desk drawer. She ruffled the pages. None were missing. She checked out her private facilities, clean, ready to go, and plugged into the ship's system to check on shower availability. Only one shower was in use. She stripped and showered quickly, then changed into an informal jumpsuit while running her uniform through the fresher. She realized she had been up and working for two full shifts. She called the bridge.
I'm going to bed, Lee, at least for a few hours.
Bed, however, did not bring sleep, tired as she was. She lay first on one side and then on the other. Her head felt strange without the implant. She'd gotten used to that at the academy. She knew she would get used to it again, but it still felt strange. She had no real traumatic memory of the fight because she'd been knocked out so fast, but she had all too clear a memory of Skeldon's face before she fell, distorted with fear and desperation.
What did he think he was doing? Why was he so stupid?
And was she really such a sucker for handsome young men who acted stupid or helpless? Or for anyone she deemed in need of rescue?
No, but people think I am.
It was not a soothing thought. Mandy Rocher, Caleb Skeldon, all the way back to various children she'd protected from siblings, parents, classmates. In the silence of her cabin, she could remember every person who had given her advice on the subject. But most of the time, they'd assumed her motive, even when that hadn't been the motive at all. She had not trusted Cal Skeldon. She had not been attracted to Cal Skeldon. She had done nothing to him or with him that any reasonable captain would not have done. No special favors, no melting glances, nothing. He'd done what he'd done for reasons of his own, and it was unfair to blame it on her. Mandy was different. She had trusted him, at least to be telling the truth when he said he needed a chaplain. But he had been a duty assigned, not someone she had chosen for herself. She'd been told to help him. Clearly, he thought he was attractive, but she hadn't found him so. She'd helped him because it was her duty. Yet in the end, it all became her fault, and the image of soft-hearted, soft-headed Kai Vada had another layer painted on it.
Why do people keep making this mistake? What am I doing that gives the impression of a gullible idiot?
Major Harris's advice to run the other way when she felt someone's need assumed the same motivation. Anyway, that might work for mercenaries, but she wasn't a mercenary. She had taken in the four Slaughterkey spacers because that's what good ship captains did when their embassy asked them for help. Standard procedure, not a quirk of hers. She wished she'd been clear-headed enough to tell him so at the time.
But what if he's right? What if my motives aren't what I think they are? Could I really be a dreamy, fog-minded fool?
She drifted from self-examination into sleep without realizing it. She woke to the intercom. A glance at the chronometer told her she'd been in bed, nominally asleep, for only 4 hours.
Captain here.
We have a message from the Victor. They're advising that they will be out of contact for at least one standard day, maybe more.
Did they say why? Ask for a reply?
No to both. But I thought you should know, in case you have anything you want to tell them.
She wanted to tell them to hurry back safely, relieve her of her passengers, and deliver payment. That was not a message they wanted to hear, she was sure.
Right. Thanks. Just send received and log it.
Yes, Captain.
This time, Kai lay awake wondering what was actually keeping the mercenaries out of contact.
Are they going into action? Did another ship come into the system? And what, if anything, can I do about it?
She rolled over and went to sleep, waking at the shift turn signal. The ISC ship Cosmos released a stealth drone, programmed to make a low V downshift into Sabine's system and report via a tiny onboard Ansible. One-channel Ansibles, tuned to the repair ship, could not be detected by other ships unless they knew the code. The jump itself required only a few hours, and the Ansible's return signal related information about the system with the scan delay of its passive scans. The low V downshift meant minimal scan blur, but ensured that information about the inner system would not be obtained for some hours. Its location was a solid 7 light hours from Sabine Prime. But in 18 hours, the drone had transmitted the ID beacon signal of every ship in Sabine's system, including that of the Glenys Jones. That report reached the desk of Louis Parmina at the ISC home office within another 10 hours, and he found it when he came into work at 7 a.m. local time. He looked at it and wondered whether to contact Vada now or later. The report said nothing about the safety of Gerard's daughter, only that the ship was transmitting its ID from a location far from Sabine Prime. No other communication related to it had been received. The existence of the ship did not mean the existence of the captain. But he himself would have wanted to know even that much. He clipped out the location data and sent a brief note. Gerard Vada had set up his office system to ping his implant at any contact from ISC. His implant woke him at 3 a.m. local time, when he was, for reasons he never understood, dreaming about dancing fish. He signed off the ping.
Glenys Jones is still in the Sabine system, no longer docked at the Sabine Prime orbital station. We have no information about personnel at this time.
So the ship was there, and whole, its beacon still transmitting its identity. But Gerard didn't know about Kai. He also didn't know if he should tell the family yet. The secret had been hard to keep, but it would be harder to listen to them all wondering about her when he had no more news. He rolled out of bed cautiously, not waking his wife, who had not slept well lately. He'd been aware of that, wondered if she had dreams of Kai, and had not asked. She still did not know. He wandered out to the kitchen. He didn't want coffee. He didn't want tea. He wanted Kai home safe. He looked in the cooler twice before making himself pour a glass of juice and drink it. From there to his office and onto the secure line to Stavros. Once he got to his office, Gerard decided it would be better to look at the news feed. The news feed, full of the details of the latest dispute about the export tariffs, did not help either his mood or his insomnia. He tried sports and arts, and finally admitted that it was now almost dawn and he might as well get up properly. He entered the master bath from the hall side and stood under the shower a long time, eyes squeezed shut against the spray, trying not to think. He came out of the shower into the bedroom, only to find his wife sitting up in bed looking at him. She had pulled the flower-patterned wrapper around her shoulders. She must have been sitting up for some time.
Don't try to tell me there's nothing. It's Kai, isn't it? I looked all over the news feed yesterday and I couldn't find anything about Belinda or Leonora or Lastway. So what is it? What's happened to her?
Gerard scrubbed at his head with the towel, trying to think of some way to divert her. But he knew it wasn't going to work. Once on the trail, she wasn't easily distracted.
Kai's in Sabine's system. She took a contract from Belinda and went to Sabine.
Even in the dim light of the bedside lamp, he could see her pale, her eyes suddenly darker against her skin.
The Sabine Ansibles.
Yes. We don't know what's happening. I called in every favor I could with ISC. You remember Louis Parmina? He's probably going to be their next CEO, and I just got a message from him. They have a drone probe in the system, and the Glenys Jones is still transmitting, still there, still whole, but nothing about Kai.
I've had dreams all this past week. But this morning when I woke up, I felt better.
We have to hope.
He wasn't sure he could.
At least she has the right things to wear. I know you think that's trivial, but it's not. The right things to wear just might make the difference.
I hope so. I sincerely hope so.
When are you telling the others?
Stavi knows. He was there when we first got the word, and we already knew she was in Sabine's system. The comm watch at headquarters, but that's it.
And now?
I think we should wait.
I think we shouldn't. Not everyone, just the family. But they should know.
A secret shared is no secret. I don't want the media to get hold of this. Not after the Academy mess.
Yes, I see your point, Gerard. All right. What can I do?
Nothing more than I can. Wait. Pray. At least the ship is there in one piece. Was there when the drone reported.
Is there. It is there. And for all Kai's blunders, she has had the habit of surviving.